The difference between getting a raise and getting comfortable. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. There's news today of an unexpectedly sharp rise in the number of people who signed up for unemployment benefits in the last week. That's a note of caution about the labor market with the official jobs report for April due tomorrow morning. Let's get some insight from Diane Swonk, founder of DS Economics in Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So when the data come out tomorrow, you'll be looking for one of the components, especially what it says about wages and raises?
Yes. We've been combing through the data, and one of the things we've seen is we finally hit a tipping point where increases in the state and local level of minimum wages have now gained traction. They're now binding, and that means we're seeing a real pickup in low-wage jobs in what they're paying, and that's showing up as an acceleration in those lower-wage jobs. That's the good news. We also haven't seen so far the reductions in employment many predicted. In fact, retail, which is one of your lowest wage sectors, has seen very strong growth this year that was not expected.
You know, okay, pay is going up incrementally, but does this add up to prosperity for Americans?
Well, what you're asking is it enough? No, it's not. Most Americans still feel we're in a recession, unfortunately, because wages have lagged, and good wage jobs and better paid jobs have not come back like we've seen. And clearly the anger we've seen at the polls is evidence enough about how people feel about their current wage situation. It's not good.
I know you ask people, they think it's still a recession, and technically, of course, it's not.
Exactly, and it's not a recession, but it is a situation where they've not regained what they've lost. And those are two different things. Just because an economy is moving up, climbing out of the bottom is not the same as being at the top of the hilltop and seeing the view.
All right. Diane Swonk at DS Economics in Chicago. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's new information about how Donald Trump plans to pay for all of this. The phrase the man himself used in the Wall Street Journal was about building a, quote, world-class finance organization to ramp up his thus far relatively lean campaign. Let's turn to Marketplace's Kimberly Adams in Washington. Kimberly, there are estimates floating around that Trump would need about $1 billion to win the general election.
Right. And even though he's very fond of pointing out the fact that he's a billionaire, he says he probably won't be self-financing this whole thing anymore. And that wasn't even technically true to begin with, since some of the money to run his campaign came from personal loans that the campaign might end up having to pay back. Now he says he's going to be actively fundraising from donors. And we've already seen pledges from some former supporters of Senator Ted Cruz that say now they're going to give money to Trump. And also, of course, all those Make America Great Again and hats and T-shirts and other campaign swag do raise a lot of money.
All right. What about these indirect funders, the super PACs?
The super PAC element is really interesting, David, because Trump campaigned really hard during the primaries about how his rebuffing of the super PACs and the rejection of their money showed his independence from money in politics. Now in his interviews, he's hinting that he'll accept their support. And the main super PAC that does support him, it's called the Great America PAC, it's already ramping up its operations.
Marketplace's Kimberly Adams. Hi, I'm David Brancaccio. Thank you for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. A lot happens while you sleep, so each morning we bring you the latest numbers on markets, money, jobs, and innovation, plus the context I think we all need to make the smartest decisions. We'd like you to help us keep our numbers strong by making a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace. And this month, your gift in any amount will be automatically doubled thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from Lumen's Own Foundation. Donate today at marketplace.org. Plans by Star Wars creator George Lucas to build his museum in Chicago may have run into an unstoppable force in the form of a lawsuit by a preservation group, Nova Safo reports.
George Lucas wants to spend more than $700 million to build a museum. In exchange, he wants a lakefront site in downtown Chicago. The problem is that in Chicago, the lakefront is public land, and a group called Friends of the Parks sued to prevent construction. Juanita Irizarry heads that organization.
You know, we have long been the defenders of our lakefront, and they apparently have not understood how important it is to us to uphold the principle that we should not have development on parkland.
The city tried offering an alternate lakefront site, but that plan also fell apart this week amid continued resistance from Irizarry's group. Now, 2 years into the effort, the Lucas Museum says it's running out of patience.
George Lucas has said over and over again that he would like to see this museum built in his lifetime.
Don Bacigalupi is the president of the Lucas Museum. He says other cities have been circling to snatch the deal away from Chicago.
We're talking about an extraordinary once-in-a-lifetime gift to a city and its people, and indeed the nation and the world, but it's going to be located somewhere.
Still, George Lucas's gift has been returned before. He gave up on his first choice, San Francisco, after years of trying to build there. Laura Lott, CEO of the American Alliance of Museums, says new museums are generally having a tougher time getting built.
As budget times get tougher, things like museums and other cultural organizations get sort of put aside as amenities or nice-to-haves and not vital.
Chicago's debate over public land use may be one symptom of shifting attitudes. After all, Lott says, it used to be common practice for governments to give new museums public lands to build on, with the idea that museums are for the public's benefit. But she says the Great Recession has reshaped that dynamic.
Not only not providing that kind of opportunity for new museums, but going back and starting to find ways to charge existing museums for their use of public land.
Which raises a question for the Lucas Museum. If not Chicago, then where? In Chicago, I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
And if you're looking for a strategy for marketing success online, here's one. First of all, get super famous, like the band Radiohead. Then compose a really good piece of music and put it on the internet. Radiohead let a single called Burn the Witch out into the digital universe 2 mornings ago. And as of now, there have been 7,043,000 views on YouTube. The animator of the song's video suggests Burn the Witch is about Europe's refugee crisis, the impulse to blame others, people perceived as different. That was the animator talking, but the Radiohead guys are not endorsing or elaborating. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.